Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio as we take a look at the Kentucky Derby in the Kentucky Oaks with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. This is our May 1st edition. Obviously, this has good lead time up until the Kentucky Oaks on Friday and then the Kentucky Derby coming up here on Saturday. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. I've got previews of the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby up over at bangthebook.com. Every Monday and Thursday, you can hear the Bettors Box right here on Bang the Book Radio. Tomorrow or Thursday or Friday, we'll have something with Christian Pina for the UFC event coming up here this weekend. Tomorrow, a new edition of the Bettors Box, as I mentioned. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of great stuff right now for the NBA and the NHL playoffs. Golf preview for the Wells Fargo Championship. NASCAR previews will be going up here today as well. So very busy time of year over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop sports betting news and information. One guest, very exciting topic here today on the program. That guest is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Adam, how you doing, pal? It's a great week. There's a lot going on. You think there's a downtime we get by the NFL draft? You think, oh, you catch your breath? Well, no, wait. We got the Derby. We got a bunch of golf majors coming up. There's a boatload of stuff to occupy our time.
Yeah, for sure. Only 2 weeks until the PGA Championship with the adjusted golf schedule. I'm sure you and I will find a way to put something together for that when that rolls around. But horse racing is something that you do year-round. Now, a lot of people just kind of pick this up for the Triple Crown races or maybe the Breeders' Cup in, you know, either late October or early November, but you do this year-round, so you are definitely an expert in this field. It's something you love to do, and I think with that in mind, we should start with some general betting tips for listeners out there that, you know, maybe do pick this up just for the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. Maybe don't do this year-round. What are some of the most important things that you suggest people look at as they're handicapping a horse race?
Oh, a race in general, this podcast would be 2.5 days long. I mean, it's insane. There's not a day goes by. I look at a daily racing form and you spot something new. There's 1,000 things in every race when you're trying to, and especially these big races, you try to break them down. I would just say as a general rule of thumb heading into this weekend, for me, everybody wants to know about the Derby. Everybody wants to know about the Oaks. And I am totally understandable. It's like Breeders' Cup Day as well. Adam, these are like the hardest races to handicap every year. Because you can make a case for, out of the 20 horses in the Derby, you can make a legitimate case for a dozen of them to fire a good shot and be part of the exact of the try. The super effective for me, which probably doesn't do anybody any good here, and we're going to talk about the Derby and the Oaks, but for me, I sit here on Friday and Saturday, and the real opportunities are at the other tracks and on the undercard. I mean, if you sit here and you look at the 20 jockeys that are racing in the Kentucky Derby, these are the best of the best from California, from New York, and they're invading Churchill Downs, which means they vacated the premises where they regularly ride. So now on a daily basis at Belmont and at Santa Anita on Friday and Saturday, all of a sudden you've got middle-tier, solid journeyman riders that are going to get on better horses that they never get a chance to ride on, and these 10, 12% riders are going to be going against the 4, 5, 6% riders on other horses. And I mean, there are literally a dozen races over the course of the weekend where you'll sit there and go, it's like a coaching mismatch. It's like, oh, this guy can flat out outride that guy. And yeah, you need the engine under the hood. You know, you got to have the good horse. But all things being equal, you're sitting there going, I just don't trust that jockey. This guy knows what he's doing. He just never gets a chance to be on this kind of horse. And it's a money-making endeavor for 2 days.
Yeah, so, I mean, in a lot of respects, I guess we could sort of draw a parallel to the Kentucky Derby being like the NCAA tournament and the other races being like the NIT, CBI, and CIT, where you know, there probably is a lot more value, a lot more incentive on those tracks. But let's talk about some of the things you mentioned, just a few more things. Let's talk about jockeys. Let's talk about the importance of them overall here as a general rule. I mean, a jockey can outright by himself sell you on taking a horse, correct?
There is no doubt. And then there will be people that scoff at that notion, but I can tell you, I've got guys I trust. I've got favorite riders. I've got and the other one are jockey trainer combinations that just, and there's one in the Derby that we'll talk about. But then there's also information and things you've got to know about. I mean, I go back 25, 30 years, John Velasquez, this guy's a great rider. Well, his father-in-law is Leo O'Brien. He's a trainer. And he's a low percentage trainer. But whatever John Velasquez was hopping on a Leo O'Brien horse, you better pay attention. John Cork's got a mount in the Kentucky Derby. His father-in-law is a trainer, Bill Fires. And every year at Oaklawn and at Churchill Downs, if John Cork is riding on a Bill Fires horse, I'm taking a look. And believe me, you're going to sit there and be way ahead at the end of the meet. And then there are the real gold mine opportunities when John Cork is not riding for Bill Fires and is going against him, or John Velasquez is not riding for his go-to guy, Todd Pletcher, and he's going against him. I mean, he's not going to, you know, fight the hand that feeds him. I mean, he's basically gotten permission from Todd Pletcher. Yeah, go ahead, you can ride the other horse. He's choosing a horse other than Pletcher's because he and his agent think that's the right horse. And if he's willing to run away from the guy that's his meal ticket, you better pay attention to that.
All right, so let's talk about the trainers here. Obviously, we mentioned the jockeys and the significant impact that they have. What about the trainers? How much does that factor into the handicap for you?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, and that's every day. That's every race. That is part of the Rubik's Cube of handicapping a horse race. What does the trainer is the coach, right? I mean, the coach tries to put his players in the best position possible to succeed. So the trainer is the guy that's around the horse each and every day. You know, what is he seeing? Do you believe in the guy? Does he know what he's doing? But is a horse always tardy at the start? And if the trainer says, I got to get him out of the gate quicker, and he puts blinkers on, and then you go and look and say, he's 18 or 20% win rate, when he adds blinkers, obviously that's an angle that's worked for him, so I trust he knows what he's doing. Or if he's taking blinkers off because the horse is kind of a hanging mule in deep stretch, but he takes the blinkers off, so the horse is going to go and pass horses. And then you look and you see that trainer's stat rate, and he's 25% when he takes blinkers off. These are things you've got to pay attention to. But changes are what this sport is all about. Do they add Lasix? Do they go from a sprint to a route? Do they turn from a route back to a sprint? Do they go turf to dirt? So you're always, not only are you handicapping the races, but you're also trying to get between the ears of the trainer. So the trainer is really the key to the whole thing. What does he, is he placing this horse in a position to succeed? And then the other thing would be first-time starters. Some guys take 2-3 races to get a horse legged up. And the horse maybe is a long-distance runner, but he's going to run him out in a sprint, and that's just to get the experience of going to the gate. And the horse is nothing more than a throwaway. But it's a useful endeavor because they're getting the horse some professional experience and doing it for the first time and learning. And then you look and say, second time out of the box, and the guy goes sprint to a route. He was pointing to the second race, not the first race. So you're constantly trying to read the tea leaves. And the trainer and the jockey are a massive part of the equation.
Now, I like to go to Thistle down around here. If I get a nice summer Saturday, beautiful sunny skies, I'll go grab a couple of beers and watch some horse races. And I always see Lasix mentioned in the program and in the racing form that's there. So what is the impact of that? I've kind of always wondered.
It's an anti-bleeding medication. And, it, you know, so the horses will... If the horse bleeds through a race, they'll put Lasix in, and it's an anti-bleeding medication, basically. But it is also something where it could be a wake-up call. I mean, there's so much that goes on, Adam, that we just, you don't know about. All of a sudden, horse, he runs three plotty races, and then all of a sudden, the horse goes nuts. Well, wow, where'd that come from? Well, the horse could have had a breathing problem that they sorted out. They figured out what they're trying to figure out what's going on. They figured out the horse had a breathing problem. Or there could be such little things where, you know, the horse's tongue, when he's running, he's clogging his breathing passage, and they'll do a tied tongue and tie his tongue to the outside of his mouth. There are so many little things that go into each. And I mean, it could be a $5,000 claimer on a Tuesday at Thistle Downs, or it could be the Kentucky Derby that they're constantly searching for the answer that gives the horse the opportunity to perform.
All right, so we've talked about the jockeys. We've talked about the trainers. Let's talk about the animals themselves, the four-legged ones, the horses. What is it that you're looking for out of a horse that'll make you confident in betting on it?
Generally or in these big races?
Just in general. Just a general, you know, like, what are you looking for out of these horses? Is it, are you looking at their times? Are you looking at, you know, how they started, how they ran in the middle, how they finished? What sort of, how do you sort of, you know, put your preference into what the horse has done?
The one that I would say this to you, and it may sound bizarre, but I can, without sounding like an idiot, I can tell you more often than not when a cheaper horse is sitting on a good race. Here, you want the analogy, right? We're going to at some point talk about golf here. Other than Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, guys that contend every week, the majority of the pros, the difference is so minuscule. Their distance control is all the same. It comes down to a putting tournament in many instances. But the middle-tier guys on the PGA Tour have once or twice a year maybe a 3 to 5 week form cycle where they're playing really well, and then something goes awry. But how many times do you see a guy he finishes 15th, but he shot a 68 or a 67 on Sunday, and he figured something out. And then the next tournament, he plays good. Then he plays good for a couple of weeks, and then he vaporizes. Horses are the same way. Horses have a form cycle. The truly good horses, the high-quality horses, fire their best shot every time. But the run-of-the-mill and just, you know, decent horses have a form cycle. So you look at workouts, you look at past performances, places that a trainer's going to put a horse, and things that have worked in the past, but it's workouts, it's things. So when you're reading it, you're trying to say, I see it. You know, it's so hard to describe, but there are days I'll go and it's like, have I ever done this before? And then there are days I'll go and I'll hit 5 races in a row. And it's like, it just jumps off the page at you because you're just looking. You know, handicappers have a form cycle, I guess is what I'm saying too. But you look at it and there are all these nuances that are there in the past performances that are tipping points. And there are things that tell you, oh, it's a workout. Yeah, he's sitting on a good race. They figured something out here. So this horse is on the improve. And then you have one other basic betting strategy. It took me a lot of years to learn this. And you're sitting there, and the horse player's mentality is a horse. And I'll give you one on Derby Day. It's Hidden Scroll, and I believe it's in the 4th race. The horse is 6 to 5 in the morning line. Now, the majority of the horse players are going to sit there and go, I can beat him. I'm going to try to beat him. Well, that's the same person that is going to bet $110 to win 100 on an NFL game that's -3, that is a coin flip, right? But that same person is going to try to beat the horse that has to fall down to lose. And sometimes, what's wrong with even money or 6 to 5? It's a plus price. If you put the sports handicapping acumen onto that, why are you trying to beat them? They're giving you one. And it's a plus price. But the mentality is, I can find a way to beat the horse. Well, why don't hey, listen, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, jump in, be part of the party.
All right, so along those same lines here, we've kind of talked in general about jockeys, trainers, and the horses. We'll get to the actual Kentucky Derby here in a second. But I want to discuss bet type here, Brian. Obviously, you can bet to win. You can bet to place. You can bet to show. You can bet win, place, and show. There are exactas, trifectas, superfectas, as you mentioned. The pick three, the pick four, the pick five, where you have to pick the winners in all of, you know, however many races it's going to be. A lot of different bet types out there, and hopefully our listeners do have an understanding of what those are. The exacta, bet them to come 1-2. You can box them, and they can come anyway. Same thing with the trifecta, 1-2-3, or you can box it, and they can come anyway. What are the betting strategies that you have in terms of the bet types, Brian? What are you usually looking to play?
Generally, on a daily basis, I will, if you're, even if you're doing exactas and tries, you're still trying to say, I believe. It's like, again, I go back to, if you're betting sports, if you're betting a basketball team that's catching 5.5 points, your starting point is, I believe this team can win the game. So even if you're doing exactas and tries, you're definitely, who's the key? Who do you think's going to win? So I always bet win and place, because jockeys make bad decisions, horses get in traffic trouble, they jump at the gate, all kinds of things. It's why they play the game. It's why they run the race. You know, bad things happen. But generally speaking, if your horse runs second and the horse is anything, let's say 5-2 or higher, if the horse runs second, you're going to get your money back. You're going to break even if the horse runs second. And then anything 4-5-1 or higher, if the horse runs second, you're actually going to make a little money. So I always advise betting win and place. And then the real value when you're going to try to hit a home run or make a big score, yeah, you can hit the trifecta, the superfecta, things of that nature. But, again, it's so hard to pick the winner of the race. Now you're sitting there trying to figure out who's going to finish third. You know, I mean, that's why it's called exotic wagering. So the money is, to me, in pick threes and pick fours, where you can spread it out and say, I've narrowed this race down. I think these four horses can win. In the second leg, I think these three horses can win. And then I'm convinced in the last leg, this horse is going to win. So if you went four horses in one race, three horses in the second race, and single the horse in the third race, and that's a dollar pick three, that's a $12 bet. It's 4 × 3 × 1. So pick threes and pick fours are where the balloon numbers come in. And then what you do, I think, Adam, generally speaking, what I'd advise, if they say, I love this horse, I've been waiting all day for this horse, is you go to the previous two races and then you handicap. And if you and in a perfect world, you've got a race that you're sitting there going, I have no clue. So I'd like to believe nobody else has a clue and something goofy can happen here. You hit the all button in a pick three or a pick four. You play them all, and you hope the longest shot the board wins. And then you use a horse or two in the middle leg, saying, you know, it's between these two, and I love this horse in the third race. You swing for the fences in a race where everybody's throwing a dart. And that's where you get you're always trying to, I hate the word value, because there's no value in ripping up a losing ticket. But in this instance, where you can find value is something goofy that nobody expected to happen, or nobody could figure out was going to happen, happened. All of a sudden now, the horse you love, instead of the horse betting the horse at 3-1, if a 30-1 horse wins the first leg of the pick three, that 3-1 horse is going to pay you 25-1 on the bet you made. So there's a way to massage this in trying to, again, find value. And there's no value if that last horse doesn't win, but you can find a way to make a heck of a lot more than that you would have if you'd have put 20 to win in place on the horse.
All right, so a lot of good foundational work talked about here before we get into the Kentucky Derby, with the importance of jockeys, trainers, and horses, the different bet types that are out there. Then, of course, you know, trying to handicap multiple races at a time to be able to hit those pick threes and pick fours and give yourself a chance with that. And also, too, you know, then you've got skin in the game. If you're somebody operating with a lower bankroll as well, maybe you just want to go have fun at the track with $100 on Saturday, have a couple pops, some laughs with your friends. The pick three and the pick four make a ton of sense because you know, you've got skin in the game of multiple races at a pretty low cost.
Well, and what the sport did, which is a good thing, and it's probably only been about 8 years now, is they made the pick three a fifth. They lowered it down to a 50-cent pick three. So, again, you could go all in a race, say, eight horses with two horses, and then the horse you like. You could go all with two with one, and that's an $8 bet. And it bleeds you out over three races, and you get an opportunity to make a nice score. So I'm thrilled they did that. Because it was always, you know, when horse racing is trying to attract new fans, the one that always drives me insane, be it TVG or, you know, all the pundits, oh, there's a pick six carryover. It's, you know, $3 million. You know, they're selling you the mega ball. You have no shot. I mean, can you hit it? Yeah. But the reality is you are competing against syndicates that are sitting there putting $2,000 tickets together to take that down. And they promote this and promote this. But the average Joe is walking into an OTB or into a sports book with $50 in his pocket. You know, you're doing all this promotion on something that the average guy can't do. You know, to promote the 50-cent pick three. Promote the Oaks Derby Daily Double is the best bet of the year because it's an over – they're huge fields. And the pool size is insane, and many people are betting with their heart because it's an event thing. So if it's a chalk Oaks Derby Daily Double, it's going to pay an overlaid price just because the pool's so big. These are the kind of things you should promote to the regular player, the average guy. Nobody, you know, how many guys are walking in there with $5,000 in their kick to go try to make money every day in a horse race? That's 5% of the world.
All right, so we'll start with the Kentucky Oaks here. And before we get too far into the breakdown of the field for this race, these are the three-year-old fillies. There are 14 of them in the race, two alternates in case somebody bows out here before the race actually begins. We've got to talk about this. Tonight, 50% chance of rain in Louisville. On Thursday, 60% chance. Thursday night, 50%. Friday, 40%. Friday night, 50%. Saturday, 60%. So it looks like the expectation here, it will be wet, it will be muddy, it will be very sloppy at Churchill Downs. And that adds an extra wrinkle into the handicap here, Brian. Not only do you have a lot of these horses in races that they've never, you know, been in with this field size before, you're probably going to have to run in the mud and in the muck and in the rain. And, you know, a lot of these horses get to this point because of their pure speed. A lot of them don't get to this point with their pure speed running in the rain. So it adds a lot of complexity to these two fields here this week at Churchill Downs. I imagine you're not real thrilled to see rain in the forecast.
Well, for the event, for the sake of the people it doesn't bother me one way or the other. Preferably, yes, you'd like the weather to be perfect. But one thing I would say, can that happen? The answer is yes. Will it happen? The answer is likely no. Because the one thing that is a constant, unless it is a constant deluge, what they always do at Churchill Downs, the race prior to the Kentucky Derby is a turf race. So they're going to have a couple of hours to work on the track. And the track drains beautifully. So if you give that crew 2 hours to work on that track, unless it's a deluge, when they come out in the final 10, 12 minutes leading up to the race, that track will be fast. Or it'll be called wet fast. But they will harrow this thing. They will scrape it to the nub. They'll have 2 hours to work on the track. And the only way it really impacts the race is if it's a monsoon in the last 20 minutes leading up to the race. Everybody gets all twisted nuts about, oh, it's going to be sloppy. These guys know what they're doing. And every year it pours for 2 days, and they get 2 hours to work on the track. And the track, you wouldn't know it rained there. So you got to give them full marks for that. And anticipate that it's likely going don't for the Derby itself. On the undercard, when they only have 15 minutes between races, you're going to be dealing with a sloppy track. You would likely will not be for the Derby.
All right, so as we look at the Kentucky Oaks here, and this is the main event on Friday night. Again, this is the Philly race, 1.8 miles for this one. So longer than most of the road to the Kentucky Oaks races, but, you know, some horses have definitely run at this length before. Usually that's not the case in the Derby, where you've got 1.25 miles. A lot of times those horses have not run that in a competitive race. So a little bit different here with the Kentucky Oaks. The favorite is Bellafina at 2-1, draws the four post for this one. I mean, is this one of those cases where the horse has to fall down to lose?
Well, she's really good. Let's put it that way. She's won 6 of 8 races. And the funny thing is, I'm doing Sportsbook Radio yesterday, and Tony Neville from Treasure Island, and he's a big horse guy. And we're in there, and we're talking about it. And I just looked at her, Bellafina. Hey, full disclosure, I looked at the Derby a lot more than the Oaks. I still got a lot of work to do. But I looked at her, and I looked and went, oh, she's Santa Anita based. She's a California based runner. As I start to make the case why I'd say buyer beware, it's right there in front of your face. She's ran second at Los Al, one at Del Mar, one at Santa Anita, and then has won in dominant fashion her last 3 races at Santa Anita. Now, she hopped and got bumped at the start and had a legitimate excuse, but there's only one time that this horse has not fired a shot, and it was at Churchill Downs, and it was in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. So horses are creatures of habit. You know, they ship them in early. You want to get them acclimated. They get really comfortable in their surroundings. So she's a stick out, but she may not be able to play a road game. And that's a real thing, Adam. There have been great horses that would win. Oh, but once the one, you should know it's right at the top of my head. There was a horse, a California horse. His horse was a monster. Oh, it's driving me nuts. I should know what it is. Anyway, win. You know, went to Churchill, spit the bit. Went to Belmont, spit the bit. So the only chink in her armor, but it is a legitimate chink, is she got to prove it to me at Churchill Downs. And she's done all this running in California, not on the road. But, boy, she's a monster. When she fires, she's the horse to beat.
The one thing I did find about Bellafina when I was doing my research yesterday, and this is in my Oaks preview over at bangthebook.com, and as you mentioned, you've got some work to do on the Oaks. I'm sure you would have found this as well. But last year at Churchill, in that Juvenile Fillies race at the Breeders' Cup, she was in heat. So that was kind of given as one of the excuses for why she didn't run all that well. Is that a legitimate thing in your mind? Is that something that would greatly affect a horse, or is that just not something that bothers you that much?
The horse could have a cough. The horse could just, you know, horse has a bad day. That's the beauty of this sport, Adam. You're asking, where do you make money? Where you make money is you've got to be willing to draw a line through a bad race. Where a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I'm not betting that horse. And if you draw a line through it and look back 3 races and say, yeah, but if she runs that race, she can win here. If she ran that race in her last race, she'd be 3-1. Well, she ran that race 3 races ago, she's 14-1. Well, you know, so in horse racing, you've got to be forgiving. And I in sports handicapping, I use so many of the things and the vernacular and strategies I employ in horse betting, I employ in sports handicapping. Because you can look at power ratings and numbers, but, you know, there's between the lines intangible things that, you know, actually that's where you find value.
All right, so as we look at the rest of this Oaks field here, we got a couple of co-second favorites on the board, Restless Rider and Champagne Anyone, both at 6-1 on the morning lines here. Restless Rider ran second in that Juvenile Fillies race at Churchill last November. Are these the two that you're kind of keying in on then, with Bellafina, you know, having to prove something to you as the favorite at 2-1?
Well, again, I got an awful lot to do. I've done a little bit of work. yes, that can be a thing where you get find that those common frame of references that they ran together. And that's the one thing that does happen is that on a daily basis, you'll get a rematch. You know, these horses ran together. Now, yeah, a horse can come right back. Yeah, this horse is just better than that horse. And but where you'll find the overlaid price and say, yeah, but let me go back to that race. And then you watch that race. And this horse maybe drew to the inside. And the other horse pinned the horse to the inside. And some horses shy away when they're down inside. All of a sudden you get to the rematch in the race, and the horse drew outside. It could be a completely different race. And you'll see in rematches that horses turn the tables all the time. So it's about the company you keep, and that's the thing. I would just say to you, of the work I've done, I did look, and here's the thing, with both the Oaks and the Kentucky Derby, these are three-year-old horses. They get one shot at this. This is the first leg of the Triple Crown for the fillies. The Derby's the first leg of the Triple Crown for the males. You get one shot at immortality, and it's all about peaking on the first Saturday of May, or for the fillies, the first Friday of May. And again, we get back to the trainer. The trainers, everything they've done to this point is pointing to this day. So, yeah, oh man, that horse was great coming in. Well, that horse may have fired his or her best shot 4 weeks ago, where the other guy is in that cycle I was talking about is pointing to this day. And then three-year-old horses are nut barns. I mean, they are still growing up. I mean, they're formative years. You know, what are they between the years? You know, they were nervous maybe in the first couple of races, but now all of a sudden the light bulb's starting to go off. They don't get skittish when they go to the starting gate. They've handled the crowd better. So that's what this is all about, peaking on the right day. And a three-year-old horse, they're still growing physically and mentally. I mean, a horse could, since his last race, a horse could have put on 80, 90 pounds. You know, they're still growing. You know, that's the other part of the Rubik's Cube, these young horses. Adam, they're a different animal 1 week to the next. So, I don't know. I hope some of that makes sense. But I'm looking at the Fairground Oaks, and Serengeti Empress was a really highly thought of horse, and she had a bad race. She spit the bit. So when I'm watching that race, I spot the horse that won the race, and was 11-1, and that was Street Man. And it's another. Here's a trainer, and Larry Jones is a guy that is great at getting horses geared up to race on the big day. And specifically, for whatever reason, Larry Jones is great at training fillies. He, for whatever reason, if I see Larry Jones training a colt, but if I see him and it's a filly, he sends it a gate, I know this guy's history and track record. And this horse, Street Band, out of nowhere, fired an incredible shot. They were like, just jumped off the page. Like, it was a completely different horse. Sat chilly in the pocket. Visually, it was impressive. The figures are not that great, but the horse won and beat a really good horse under wraps. And that's the other thing I'm watching for. There was a lot more in the tank that they didn't use that day. And for me, the light bulb went off for Street Band, and that's a horse I'm going to be keying most of my stuff around. And, oh, by the way, the Hollywood Story is going to be there. It's the Phillies race. It's the Ladies' Day at Churchill. And Rosie Napravnik, the female jockey, won the Oaks. It was like the big thing. And, you know, she won the race twice. It's a female rider. She's a journeyman rider. She knows what she's doing. She's got a relationship with his horse. That's what I could just see. The Hollywood script and the whole day and the ladies going nuts. Sophie Doyle rides for Larry Jones, 15-1. Number 12 Street Band is the one I'm kind of keen on.
Well, make sure you check out my preview over at bangthebook.com, where I didn't mention Street Band the way that Brian did. So definitely gives you some good food for thought there with a horse that wasn't on my radar with the write-up yesterday, but definitely one that's on my radar now. So let's go to the Kentucky Derby here, Brian. And let's talk about this first and foremost here. you know, when you talk about the Kentucky Oaks, as I mentioned, 14 horses in it. I was watching some of the Road to the Kentucky Oaks races, four horses, five horses, maybe six. Sometimes you had as many as eight. Well, here in the Kentucky Derby, 20 horses. The auxiliary gate spots, 15 or 20. This is a much bigger field than most of these horses are accustomed to. How does that sort of factor into the handicap?
Well, the post position draw is a big thing. You don't want to draw the rail. Some people go bananas. And it is kind of a it's like a random exercise. Explain this to me, Adam. You know, Roadster is a real good horse. 6-1. Bob Baffert won the Santa Anita Derby. And then everybody's like, well, but he drew post 17. I'm like, yeah, so what? Well, post 17 is the only post position that has never won the Kentucky Derby. But there's no rhyme or reason to that. I mean, the auxiliary gate has horses 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20. 16 is a real favorable spot, and that's where Game Winner drew, because there's probably about a 4 or 5 yard gap. There's the gate with the first 15, the actual gate. Then there's an auxiliary gate where they hook it up, but there's about a 5 yard gap between 15 and 16. So the 15 and 16 runners have an edge. The others don't. They can break sideways a little bit, and they got extra room to do it and not get killed at the starting gate and get have their race taken away from them. But you're telling me 17 is this big problem? With Smarty Jones won out of was Smarty Jones won out of the 20 hole in Big Brown?
Big Brown was out of 20.
Big Brown 20. I'll have another. The 18 should probably, I think, then 16, I believe, maybe with Smarty Jones. But for some reason, 17, you know, I mean, the sample size is pretty big, but there's no rhyme or reason why that's the case. Actually, I think the auxiliary gate's a great place to be because you have such a long run down the first stretch into the first turn that being to the far outside, you can slowly and gradually ease your way over and avoid, for the most part, the madness that is that physical run by the spires for the first time. I think it's an advantage to be out there, personally.
All right, so speaking of 16 Game Winner, the second favorite on the board, the favorite is Omaha Beach. We'll talk about him in a second. But on Game Winner, you've got Joel Rosario in the irons with Bob Baffert. You know, I mean, obviously, this is kind of your dream team pairing as far as the Kentucky Derby goes, because you've got Baffert and a very experienced, very successful jockey. Does that factor too much into how people bet these races sometimes, in the sense that these are all good horses, these are all world-class trainers and jockeys in one way or another, but you've got Baffert and Rosario, two names that, you know, the common fan knows pretty well. I mean, it seems to me like Game Winner is probably going to close the favorite here, right?
I think there's name recognition is certainly a part of it. I don't know who the favorite's going to be. But I will tell you, I think the favorite's going to be 9-2. I mean, that's how wide open this race is. I got to tell you, Adam, guy I really respect yesterday, I just said, who do you like? And he said the horse. And I said, thank you. I said, well, what am I missing here? Maximum Security is on the board at 10-1. And I'm trying to figure out why. I got to think Maximum Security. I think Maximum Security could come down and be the favorite in this race. I'll go back to when War Emblem won the Kentucky Derby. One of the handicapping tools you use in the racing form are called the buyer figures. It's the dark black italicized numbers. And it's like, so there's 2 minutes to post, you grab the form, it gives you the wherewithal to have a quick comparison of other horses. Well, the guy that invented the buyer figures is named Andy Beyer. He's been around horse racing forever. You know, he knows it all. Well, back when the buyer figures were a new thing, War Emblem had the biggest buyer by a mile, and he didn't pick War Emblem. And War Emblem, you know, just cruised. And it always used to be that a prerequisite to win the Derby was you needed a buyer figure in excess of 100. The fact is, there is only one horse in this race that has a buyer figure of 100 or higher. And that's back-to-back races for maximum security. And for the life of me, I'm trying to figure out why is this horse 10-1? He won the Florida Derby. And he's the only horse in the race with a buyer figure that exceeds 100. That's no guarantee he's going to win. I'm trying to figure out why are they thumbing their nose at this horse. I think people are going to bet this horse with 2/5.
I mean, I think it's one of those things, and obviously I'm nowhere near as advanced as you are, but as I was sort of reading through and doing my preview and looking at all the information and all that, I think a lot of it has to do with the trainer in Jason Service, in the sense that he doesn't push his horses in the lead up to these big, the Triple Crown races and stuff like that. So he doesn't really have the same results or the same workout times as some of these other horses. But as you mentioned, you put him in the Florida Derby and he dominated it. So I think it's one of those things where just, maybe people are a little bit hesitant because they haven't seen it in the workout times or something else.
And forgive me. Omaha Beach has 101 buyers. So the Omaha Beach does have 101 buyers. And that's Mike Smith. Mike Smith's the big money rider. But basically, this maximum security is part of the equation. I can tell you one thing, and it's still early in the week, but I've done more work in it. The one horse, I'm almost convinced, will be part of this in terms of the exacta and the trifecta, is win, the number 14. I love Julian Pimentel, terrific rider. Nobody knows who he is. He rides at Laurel. He's in the Maryland circuit for Mike Trombetta, Maryland-based trainer. This horse is a stone-cold closer, but he just keeps going. And the one thing that always happens in the Kentucky Derby, and I can't explain it, but Adam, close your eyes and think of Big Brown or think of Smarty Jones. Or think of any horse you were just off the top of your head remembering their race when they won. This race plays out the same way every year. Some horse draws off, wins the race by two or three lengths. Two horses maybe battling for second, that's moderately close. Then something comes from out of the clouds, finishes fourth. Then there are a couple of horses right behind them. And then the next 10 are 20 lengths back. This race, it visually plays out the same way almost every year. You would love to see, eight horses at the 16 pole, and it's a cavalry charge, and get this electric photo finish. And, my God, look at all these horses. Oh, they're all going to come back to the Preakness because it was so competitive. It never happened, right? I mean, the race visually insert a different name, 9 times out of 10, that's how that finish is going to look come Saturday.
Well, and what's interesting here about this horse is that you look at win, and the performances that he had in the road to the Kentucky Derby races, that was with Erod Ortiz Jr., who's on Improbable here, which I think, I was kind of reading on it, and I sort of read between the lines that maybe Windstar Farm wanted Ortiz Jr. on top of Improbable. So maybe it was out of his hands. Maybe he didn't make the call to get off of win. Because obviously you always want to look at these jockey changes late and sort of try to figure out what's going on with those. The fact that he goes with Pimentel instead of Ortiz here, was that the trainer's call? Was that the agent's call? Was that the stable's call? You're sort of trying to figure all that out. It doesn't seem like Ortiz made a decision here.
Well, I can't say for certain. I've got a pretty educated guess. But the guy we're never talking about, and nobody ever talks about, the key guy is the jockey agent. The jockey agent is the key to this whole thing. Because he's the guy that's working and plotting a course to put his guy on the horse that he thinks is going to win. And there's a reason the best jockeys, they're on the best horses, but they're on the best horses because they got the best agent. And nobody ever talks about the jockey agent. Now, Erod Ortiz is a stud. He's one of the top, certainly top 10, maybe top 5 riders in the country currently. So you know, I would imagine that Ortiz and his agent, they probably had the choice. So, yeah, you look at that stuff. Sometimes they choose wrong. But the one thing I would say to you on win-win-win, I'm not saying win-win-win is going to win. The race would have to completely collapse, and it's possible, but it's a rarity. But the one thing that is a constant is this course always close. So when I just described that picture to you, the 10 of them are going to be way back. This horse is going by those 10 like they're tied to a post, and he's going to keep coming. Now, I think he's more prone to finish third or fourth. So for trifectas and supers, I just think win-win-win is going to come flying late. But when you said Ortiz got off, the one thing I would say to you is if you go back and look, in his first four races, and the biggest figure that this horse ever ran, Julian Pimentel was the rider. So it's not like Pimentel doesn't know this horse. Sean Betta said, I think this horse can win the Derby. So what did he do? He went to the highest profile guy he could find. You know, it probably didn't want to hurt Pimentel's feelings. I got to do this. I got to do this. And then Ortiz bailed on him and went somewhere else. Well, he went, instead of going to get another big name rider, he went back to the guy that knows the horse. So Julian Pimentel would be a great story. And I think he knows how to ride. So I think win-win-win is in the money. I think he's part of the discussion late in the race.
All right, let's touch on the favorite here a little bit more, Omaha Beach. Mike Smith on Omaha Beach, won last year on Justify. Obviously, he knows how to pick him, or at the very least, his agent certainly knows how to pick him for him. What about that? What about the fact that he's with Richard Mandela here, Omaha Beach, with that phenomenal run in the rain at Oaklawn? That was something that I kind of keyed in on here, especially if this track does wind up getting pretty sloppy on Saturday. What about Omaha Beach? I mean, is this a deserving favorite?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's lumped in there. He's in there. It's so known. Well, here's the thing. You're saying, is he a deserving favorite? Well, he's 4-1. You know, I mean, it's like they had to pick somebody. I mean, if he was this deserving favorite, he'd be 5-2. You know. What I'm saying? I mean, he's the best of a pretty evenly matched lot. He's done a lot right here of late. The one thing I would say to you, is there a horse that's praying for the monsoon? I think it's Omaha Beach, because Oaklawn was a soup kitchen. And two races prior to that, won by 9 lengths, it was a rocket sled in the slop at 7 furlongs at Santa Anita. I think this is a horse that the rain moves him way up if the track is really wet. I mean, sloppy soup kitchen wet. The one thing is, you know, you look at some of these races, he's blown speed. That's the quandary in this race. Pace makes the race. There's 20 horses. The 10 of them, it's more about the owners saying, yeah, let's take a shot, and they can always tell their friends and family, and they got a big party, and they're at Churchill Downs for 4 days. And they can always say, we ran in the Kentucky Derby. The 10 of them have no shot. But what's going to happen is it's called cheap speed. So some of those horses that have no shot are just going to bolt to the front. And those horses with no shot can most assuredly compromise the chances of a horse like Omaha Beach.
There's one horse I want to ask you about, because in my research, I found that I like this horse quite a bit. That's Code of Honor. You know, Shug McGee is not a guy that's in this race all the time. The last time he was, it was with Orb, who won this, I believe, back in 2013. He's got John Velasquez on top. What do you think about Code of Honor this week at 15-1?
There's still a lot of work to be done. All right, we're early in the week. The Code of Honor, if you're listening and the folks who are listening to, you know, what I said earlier, this is one that sticks out like a sore thumb. John Velasquez is Todd Pletcher's go-to guy. John Velasquez is not riding a Todd Pletcher horse. Todd Pletcher's always got an army. He's always got a shot to win the thing. Velasquez won the Derby for Todd Pletz. He's riding for Shug McGahee. So Velasquez made the decision here. And whether he's right or wrong, John Velasquez is telling you he's sitting on a horse that's better than the horses that Todd Fletcher's sending out. On that premise alone, I'd be looking at Code of Honor. And he's never raced on a wet track. And so he could just explode if there's moisture in the track, or he could run lap, you know. But I mean, but there are great unknowns here. The one thing that is known is that John Velasquez is not riding for Todd Fletcher in this race, and that is no small thing.
All right, last thing I want to ask you about here then and let you go, because I know we ran a little bit longer than I think both of us anticipated with this. Anybody else on the board that you like? I know you mentioned Maximum Security. I know Game Winner is going to get a ton of love. Omaha Beach will get a lot of love as well. Anybody we didn't talk about that's on your radar?
And again, I'm sorting through it, but it's a sneaky one. And I'm looking at the 10, Cutting Humor. Corey Lannery is a really good jockey. Here's Todd Fletcher. Velasquez rode this horse. We just got this. It's a good segue. Velasquez rode Cutting Humor to win the Sunland Derby. Velasquez has opted to go elsewhere. Generally speaking, the Sunland Derby is not thought of as this big, great prep, although when the board blew up, it was Mind That Bird that came from Sunland. There's a different path to the Derby now than there's ever been before. They're coming through Tampa. They're coming through Oakland. They're coming through Fairgrounds. I mean, they're coming from everywhere. People will kind of thumb their nose at the Sunland Derby. But that race was March 24th. That was a while ago. You know, I mean, this one's laying in the weeds. I got a weird feeling, you know, Fletcher's got this horse getting primed up and ready to fire a monster shot. And this horse ran his best race by a mile in the Sunland Derby. And if the horse, and he's had an extra week or two to prepare than some of the others, if the horse come out of the race good and he's eating good, he's working great. If this horse takes a step forward, Cutting Humor's in the equation. And again, it's that Rubik's Cube of what we started way back when we started about the between the lines stuff. This is one that's a between the lines thing. Fletcher knows what he's doing. Velasquez had choices, chose something else. But the Cutting Humor, since Velasquez rode that horse, he's now comparing Cutting Humor to the other horses he's ridden. But the reality is, this horse could be a completely different horse from the end of March than when Velasquez last rode it. So I think Cutting Humor has a shot.
Yeah, I like Cutting Humor too a little bit to hit the board late, maybe be part of some trifectas or superfectas. I would love to see it make a run too, because Corey Lannery, who's been very, very good at Churchill Downs, this is his home track. He obviously knows it very, very well. Lost his wife in very tragic fashion last June. So I know a lot of people will be rooting for Lannery here this weekend, will be rooting for the family. It's his adopted hometown of Louisville. I hope for his sake and for everybody involved with this thing that Cutting Humor does make a pretty big run. And to be honest with you, if that horse wins with Lannery up top in the irons, I won't be the least bit upset if all my bets lose, because I wouldn't mind seeing that happen for him.
Well, you know, and there are great stories in here, and I'm sure that will be one that'll be profiled on race day. And there's a million ways to look at this and, you know, try to find the winner. But I think I'd like to think in the discussion we just had here, I think Maximum Security's done nothing wrong. I think we'll be every week there's a buzz horse, a now horse. I don't know how the Florida Derby winner becomes a buzz horse, but I think the morning line is too high. So I would anticipate Maximum Security coming down, and I don't know that that necessarily qualifies as he's the buzz horse, other than people are just going to say, no, they didn't agree with the morning line. And then the price horses, I think the Cutting Humor and Win-Win-Win are absolutely horses that I think have a shot to be a part of the equation. I don't know about winning, but you know, the exact, it can pay a lot of money in the Kentucky Derby, and I could see a cutting humor or a win-win-win crashing the exotics with the exact in the tri. Anyway, it's a great – the beauty of it, Adam, is – and we're doing a podcast on it, right? I mean, I do this every day. I love horse racing. And it's the Derby. And there'll be people that don't look cross-eyed at horse racing. And the last time they looked cross-eyed at it was the last first Saturday in May. But a lot of people are going to jump into the fray and have fun with it. Box your address, you know, bet a birthday. What? You look at some of the payoffs in these kind of races, and you get that good experience, you know, cashing a big ticket, and maybe fall in love with the sport and start to pay attention to it and enjoy the daily challenge. But there really is the opportunity in this endeavor to bet toothpicks and take home the Lumberyard.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun talking about this with you, and I've gotten into horse racing a lot more over the last couple of years, and I love it, and I enjoy writing about it. It's a great change of pace from all the usual stuff I do. And, you know, for the listeners out there, obviously this is the Kentucky Derby, but go to your local track on a Saturday or on a Sunday or something if you've got Sunday racing, and just go have some fun with it. You know, it can be something you don't have to put a whole lot of money into and, you know, get a nice summer day and definitely enjoy that. But Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, I'm sure you'll chat a little bit more about this on your program.
Oh, yeah. In fact, weekdays noon to 2. Let's see. Tomorrow, Rich Eng from the Daily Racing Forum will be on with us to talk about the Kentucky Derby. And on Friday, I'll be out at Sunset Station doing the radio show. And we'll be doing a Derby seminar in the Sportsbook if you happen to be coming to Vegas Friday night, 6 o'clock. We always get a great turnout. We're in the Racing Sportsbook at Sunset Station. I'll be doing a seminar with Hammer and Hank Goldberg from ESPN, Rich Eng from the Daily Racing Forum, Dave Valeno from Track Phantom. And we don't talk just about the Derby. We talk about the undercard because I think there are great, great opportunities, not only at Churchill Downs, but all around the country. And we dish out a lot of, knock on wood, we have in the past. Hope we do it again. Dish out a lot of nice long shots at that seminar. So we invite people to come on out for that.
Well, I certainly recommend people check out all of Brian's stuff. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian Blessing. And also he'll be doing a Derby and an Oaks video for us over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. So you definitely want to make sure that you check that out as well. Brian, I appreciate the time as always, man. Thanks for sticking it out for a little bit longer of a segment here. Good luck with everything in the Derby, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Buddy, I'll say this to you. I appreciate you taking, investing the time to talk about the horse racing on a broader scale than just the Derby. I think I love the sport. I'm a monster fan of the sport. I worked at a racetrack. What you said, go to a track, check it out once, have some fun with it, and enjoy the challenge of trying to pick a winner because it's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Brian, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Have a great day, bud.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, KSHP.com. How you can find those also at Brian Blessing on Twitter. New edition of the Bettors Box comes your way here on Thursday, and then we'll also chat UFC with Christian Pena. Likely get that posted here on Friday morning this week. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Make sure you go check out my Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby previews over at BangTheBook.com, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.